Welcome to episode 6 of New Tech People. On this episode, I sit down with Wayne Ingram. We talk about his opinions on university degrees as a necessity and his advice for those starting out in technology. Welcome to episode 6 of New Tech People. Today we have Wayne Ingram. With us, mate. Welcome, Wayne.
Thank you.
Mate. Thanks for coming on the show. Wayne and I have known each other for quite a while now, since my early days as a tech recruiter in Newcastle. So, mate, thank you for coming and joining us today. I think it'll be interesting to see your opinion on the Newcastle tech scene in particular, given the fact that you've been around for a while.
Yeah, I feel like I'm getting old too.
To give people an overview of, you know, who you are and what you've been doing, mate, can you give us a two-minute overview?
Yeah. So my current title is Executive Manager of Technology. I work for MindSuper, and it's a bit of a generic title, and that goes to the fact that I sort of have a few different hats. Very much focused in that security, DevOps, engineering sort of space. I spent some time doing cloud and some operations there over the last couple of years, and I think I've been there maybe 2.5 years, thereabouts.
Yeah, nice. 2.5 years, and your title has changed a couple of times. I know when you started out, it was more of an infrastructure cloud role.
Yeah.
And you obviously evolved in that time and wearing some new hats, which is good.
Mm.
I think it's probably a sign of the times in Newcastle as well. It's moved from a more old school infrastructure role to, you know, some different facets of that now, which is exciting.
Yeah, and I guess a bit of me growing up as well. I've sort of taken on a bit of management executive sort of role, which is sort of a first time in my career. I've been very much back of the office, tech focused all my career, and this is sort of my first step into that, being involved in the actual business of the organization and sort of that decision making process.
Nice, man. I wasn't thinking about going there yet, but I think that's a good point you raise. And as people go up the chain in technology, that rise of going from a pure technical role to more of that business focus and having a look at technology as an enabler and how technology fits within business. And there's a massive rise in that, and obviously that's led to your growth.
It's certainly something I've struggled with over the last couple of years, and deciding about where I want to be, whether I want to stay tech focused or whether I want to delve into that. And I've various jobs I've had in the last couple of years have sort of touched on that. And the industry is changing a bit. There's now that acknowledgement that if you want to stay tech, you can be that sort of higher end tech, that sort of at a level to an executive. I think that's sort of still maybe emerging in Newcastle, but certainly in other markets it sort of exists. But I sort of falling into the side where I want to be involved in some of those decisions around the tech still, but how the technology can enable the business in a better way.
Mate, that I find that extremely, extremely important and very relevant. It's a lot of the conversations I'm having, right, obviously with different people, different stages in their career, who get into technology because they're technical and they love technology, they're loving being hands-on with technology, and they grow their career up to a certain point. And at that point, you either have to become more of a people manager and a business-orientated approach to sort of continue to grow. But there is that rise now of staying super technical and becoming and subject matter expert from a technical perspective and not having to have that people management / business focus.
Yeah, it's an interesting quandary, because there's this expectation that once you become an executive and a manager that you take on people.
Yep.
You know, so I have a couple of people I take care of, and being a tech all my life, I don't have people management skills. It's not something that's inherently that you get, you know, potentially in different careers. And there's, I think it's a bit strange that there's this expectation that suddenly, oh, you're X number of years old, or you've been in the industry a certain number of years, suddenly through osmosis you've got people leadership skills. And I think you see a lot of, I think, technical people that step into that realm and fail at it because they're not well equipped or they haven't been helped into it. And to be honest, I've struggled with getting into that space, and I'll be the first to acknowledge I'm not the best people leader in the world, but I think where we're at now at MindSuper, you know, there's that acknowledgement of that, and it's I guess a journey.
Yeah, cool. From a training perspective then, because I think this could be a really valuable point for some other people, right? You've obviously been through this journey and still on the journey.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people who are technical in nature, probably similar to yourself, who become really, really solid in their technical capabilities and they want to be promoted and they're being pushed up the chain because of their knowledge. What would be your best advice for how people can move into that people management or more leadership opportunity when it doesn't really feel natural?
I think it's, and to be honest, I'm still working through it, so I'm not sure I have all the answers, but I think it's being upfront about it. So, you know, letting the organisation or your supervisors know that, you know, I'm happy to make that step, but I'm going to need that support, you know, and it's not going to be, you know, I'm not going to have this squared away, do my one-on-ones every month and have this perfect sort of setup. Administration and paperwork's not our forte. We're technical people first. So there has to be that sort of allowance and that room to grow, I think, and that support network is probably important. I
completely agree. Probably, and in some cases, either a closer fit with HR and HR's involvement with that and, you know, the people management and those, you know, processes. Because I think there's a lot of people, technology background in particular, right? A lot of technology folk or technically minded people skills might not be their forte. If you had to put, it's a mass generalization, I know, but I think
it's certainly the case for me. You know, public speaking, people skills, you know, I would consider myself a bit of an introvert.
Yeah.
And they're sort of the skills and the characteristics that align with technology. It's, you know, I know people joke about it, but that's a fact. So
true. I completely agree. And from the perspective of, you've obviously been through it, you're still on that journey, you're definitely, you know, you're not the, you know, answers to anything, but is there a piece of training or any key advice that you've been given through that period that's really helped you that might help someone else?
I probably couldn't put my finger on one specific thing, but I guess some of the experiences I had, and we'll talk about training and that education coming up, I'm sure, but having a bit more varied focus than just pure tech. So taking interest in other things. I think formal education assists in that. It teaches you things like writing reports and meeting deadlines and prioritizing and those sorts of things. And some of those things just get out of life as well. You know, when you have a family, you have kids, you can't do everything. You need to start learning to prioritize and doing what's important. I think management is just an extension of those sorts of skills.
Yeah, I don't think people might question my management capability if they see me at home sometimes with three kids running around. Yeah. It's a bit mental, three kids under five. But I think it's you learn time management, you learn, you know, leadership, I guess, from that perspective as well. And I think you made a good point. It's about sort of taking learnings of other aspects of life or other things you're doing and how you can relate that back to your day-to-day life and your work life.
I think something that makes a good technologist, in my opinion, is the ability to adapt quickly. You know, I read an interesting article on a blog post very recently by Atlassian, actually, someone from Atlassian, and it was about when they hire people, they don't necessarily look for experience. Like, experience is important, but if you've got 20 years experience in one thing, then it means that's all you're going to be good at. You know, they sort of look to hire people who adapt and learn quickly. And in a tech space, that's a good thing because things are changing all the time. But then I think if you can adapt and learn quickly in other areas, then that will sort of bode well as in addition to sort of the tech space.
Mate, I agree. I think you make a really good point. Obviously, someone from Atlassian is a very smart cookie.
Yeah.
Mate, you obviously mentioned you come from a technical background. That is your background. What got you into technology to start with?
I've been interested in tech since a very young age. I'm a kid of the 80s, so I guess that makes me an ex-gen.
Yeah.
And so I grew up in the 80s and 8-bit computers, that sort of time. I had a very, very early on interest in electronics.
Yeah.
If anyone's old enough to remember the old Dick Smith kits and those sorts of things, I used to enjoy building those. And I got introduced to computers, would have been in primary school, back in the day when the government had that scheme where they supplied microbees to the schools, and that was my first exposure to a computer, and it just, I guess, it just fascinated me. So from that point on, I was quite interested in it. It wasn't until sort of my early high school period that we actually got a home computer, and that was an Amstrad. That was back in the Commodore 64 days, and just from then on, that was just something interesting. I spent hours writing programs in BASIC and doing sorts of things on that. And it's while I played games and that sort of stuff, it was more the curiosity that interests me. And from that point on, I was always destined to do something technology.
Yeah, nice. Commodore 64 came up in my house when I was young fella. I was a pretty good Space Invaders player. So that was
sort of what, mid-80s, I think? Yeah, yeah. Mid to late 80s.
Yeah, I think we were a little bit behind the times. Mm-hmm. But I was a pretty good Space Invaders player.
Mm.
And that was about the extent of my technical at that stage. Mate, you come from that tech background, an interest in technology. You mentioned before the word university. It's something I do like to try to, to ask all the guests, because I think there's some differing opinions on the value of university and how that is changing, but we won't even go into that yet. But mate, how did you find university for you personally?
I'll probably got a bit different story to most, and my opinion has changed over time. So when I went through high school, did year 12, had no intention of going to university. I wasn't even going to, at that stage it was called TER, I'm not sure what they call it these days, but I didn't even apply for one. My school eventually forced me to get one because they thought, what's the point of doing it? But yeah, I left school, I went and did a computer course in Melbourne, and my intention was I was just going to get a job and that's the end of it. And I got the job, sort of started enjoying life. I was sort of very early 20s, lots of money, or appeared to be lots of money at that age, and was having a good time. Then I picked up a job at a local council, and they had a junior sort of role, and one of their requirements is you had to do education. So I was sort of, my hand was forced, and so I picked something to do, and I picked a programming degree at Monash University. So I was doing that at the same time as I was doing full-time work. I left the council and got a job over on the Central Coast with an organisation that was a worldwide sort of mining IT vendor.
Yeah.
And I spent the next couple of years flying all over the world to sites to do IT stuff. And I kept up the university. So I sort of did that university by correspondence in a period of time. So that would have been, some mid-90s. I was doing that when, they didn't have this sort of correspondence stuff. Communication via lecturers was via email and Usenet, if anyone knows what Usenet is. And I sat exams on the exact same day as internal students, and I ended up sitting exams all over the place. I sat one in the University of London and a couple in the US, depending on where I was at that time with my job. So if I was in hindsight, I probably would have went to university straight up and got that out of the way. It sort of took me 6 or 7 years to get that done in between jobs. And
do you think you're better for it, though, given the fact
that you're getting work experience? Yeah, I think so. There's a number of times I considered giving it up and had good advice and didn't, because I had a lot of money invested in it.
Yeah.
But, I think being the sort of having the technical aptitude that I do have, I don't think I got a huge amount out of it for the content they were giving from a technology point of view. But what I did get out of it was those other skills. They required you to do a certain number of subjects in non-IT disciplines. So I did psychology and a few different things. They taught things like how to research, how to write papers, as I sort of mentioned before, about prioritizing that sort of stuff. And I had that, I guess, as a mega dose because, I would be like in LA and I had a decision between going out with my work colleagues or doing an assignment that was due the next day.
Wow.
And, didn't always pick the right option, I'll admit. But I think they were really interesting life lessons sort of that I learned in that period of time. And I think some of those things are now actually helping me now. They may not have helped me sort of when I was still doing pure tech, but some of those things are sort of coming back now. So it's a long time, long return RTO.
Mate, as long as it's providing value, right?
Yeah.
Mate, obviously, so that's your experience. What's your opinion on, if you're hiring into your team or you're looking at colleagues or, let's say hiring into your team, would you prioritise looking for people with a degree?
I wouldn't have that as a requirement.
Yeah.
I very much acknowledge that people have different paths into the industry and that sort of stuff. But if I was sort of judging two people and they were very similar levels, then I'd probably take the degree person over the not just because of those extra skills that they would have. So it's really a case-by-case basis, I think. And I don't think there's any one right answer. I think different people learn in different ways. And for some people, formal education is great. And then you get your sort of millionaires that have tech companies that sort of dropped out, you know, first year and have been successful. And they're probably more successful for their business acumen than whatever they're going to learn in some technology course anyway. So
agreed. Mate, there's obviously, that's formal education. There's multiple aspects to that. And formal education is changing as well. As you mentioned, you probably went through a non-standard approach where you're doing it whilst working. Other people are, you know, 3-4 years in, and that's all you're doing. And now there's sort of that rise of, let's call it micro-credentials or smaller credentials. And what's your opinion on, that continued education or the model outside the sort of standard?
I think continued learning is important, and that's something, if you're in a technology space, you've got to continue to learn because everything's evolving, things are changing. That being said, I'm not a big fan personally of just certifications. I think just because it says that you know a particular product and that product's going to be invalid in a couple of years' time. So I don't see a big deal in that, but I think other sort of courses than that. So I'll often go on courses or go to a training, but I don't see much point in getting a piece of paper after it because it might have relevance right now, but in a few years' time it probably won't. I tend to do a lot of reading of blogs and podcasts, and experimenting I think is important in technology, actually trying things out for yourself. That's sort of where I've been at. That being said, I'm sort of considering going back and doing a master's. I have no particular reason why, and I know when I finished my undergraduate degree I said never again, but never say never, because it's I think it's now appealing to me, not for anything in my career, but just as a self goal. Like, I think I would like to have that next step for no other reason than to feel good about it, I think.
Yeah, and there'd be some value there, right?
I'm sure something will rub off, but I don't see it opening a door to the next role, so to speak. I've already sort of stepped into that management piece, so it's not going to get me that part. I don't see it realistically getting me any more money.
Yeah.
It's just more being a more rounded individual, I think.
That continued learning, right? You mentioned the word before, continued learning. I think it's vitally important. I don't think you get to where you are, right? Mm-hmm. Unless you are somebody that's actually committed to learning.
You've got to be motivated, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for me, I guess it comes naturally in that I get bored very easily.
So do I.
So I don't sit still. It's evidenced by the fact that I probably have like 30 hobbies and spend very little time in all of them.
Yeah.
And I'll hop between them. I'll have a favourite at this point in time. And it's because I have this thirst for being entertained and doing new things. And it's sort of come out a few times in my career, in my life, where I've actually enjoyed the journey more than I've enjoyed the outcome. A very simple example from my younger youth, you know, when I was, probably early teens, used to enjoy going over to the local remote control airfield and watch the planes fly around. And I used to think, one day I'll get a job, I'll get money, I'll buy myself one and do that. And I ended up doing that, got my first job, and I'm sure you could probably guess the outcome. Loved building it, never flew it, because I was on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And that's sort of been the way I've progressed in a lot of things. I have a blog, and I set out myself the task of actually creating it using certain technologies. I enjoyed that, created the blog, it's got like 4 posts on it because I've now moved on.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the way I've been through my life. And yeah, so that means that things like doing the masters or something like that, it's a new challenge. It's something
definitely be a challenge based on what you just said, right? It forces you to stay strong and stay.
It does, yeah. And it's probably one of the out of character things of my personality is I completed my undergraduate degree, which took, I think, 7 years part time. And usually 7 years to invest in something for me is a long time. You know, I would have got bored with that a few times. So I'm quite proud of the fact that I completed that because, you know, had I not, I could have been very easily dropped and moved on. You know, I was already in a job. I didn't need it to get a job.
Yeah.
I wasn't really learning technology things from it, which I wanted. So,
Mate, you mentioned before, like, let's continue down that learning path. A couple of blogs and podcasts you listen to. Mate, what's the most interesting, let's start with podcasts, most interesting podcast or podcasts?
Thing that interests me at the moment is probably security because it's such a fast evolving field. So I listen to a local Australian podcaster. It's called Risky Beers.
Yeah.
Patrick Gay is the guy who runs that, and that's really just more of a news type podcast about the security environment at the moment, what's happening. And I find that quite interesting because there's a lot of geopolitical type things involved in that sort of stuff. So I find that quite interesting. Similar sort of vein, I listen to Troy Hunt, another Australian on security.
I think I got an email from him the other day that says my password's been hacked or something.
Yes, yes. He runs the site where he collects all the information about sites that have been hacked, and we'll let people know about that if you sign up for it. So
yeah, I've signed up.
So that's Troy.
I follow him on Twitter as well.
Yeah, so he's quite an interesting character.
Yeah.
And then other things, non-tech related, I listen to woodworking ones, I listen to electronics ones. I watch a lot of YouTube these days. So finding myself
Videos?
Sorry?
Cat videos?
No, not cat videos. I find myself watching less and less TV.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's true for a lot of people.
Yeah. You're picking, choosing what you want on demand, right?
Yeah.
What do you watch on YouTube?
Following those various themes, I'll watch security stuff, I'll watch electronic stuff, I'll watch woodworking. But it's a bit of a rabbit hole. I'll find new interests and new people through that sort of other things you get, you know, their
that right-hand sidebar.
That right-hand sidebar is dangerous. You can spend a few hours going down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, yeah. That's I agree. From a blog perspective, mate, what are you reading?
I use a feed aggregator. So if I had to count, there's probably a couple of hundred on there, but I don't religiously read them every day. I sort of scan through. So,
mate, this is something I haven't had mentioned on the podcast before, mate, the feed aggregator, what is it that you use?
Yeah, so Feedly. Yeah. I used to use the Google one way back in the day until they disbanded, but Feedly's the one I use. And so, yeah, again, similar sort of topic areas, but there would be hundreds in there. And I think I find that useful because I want sort of what's interesting going on across the board, and so I sort of put a lot of things in there, scan through what, and various things will jump out at me, and I'll read sort of those articles, but I wouldn't read every article every day because that's all you do. So, but it's a way I find of staying current and sort of having your fingers on a lot of sort of areas.
Yeah, mate, you can find out about a lot just even scanning the headlines if you know all those articles that have been published, right? You don't have to read six articles on the same subject to know,
that's right,
you know, there's been this update or this is a trending topic or whatever.
Yeah, so that's another thing. Indication is, you tend to look into what's trending at the moment. If a particular topic area interests me, I'll look for what the most popular article on the topic is.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's potentially leading you down the wrong way because once you get the momentum, it's always going to stay there. But that's sort of the way I handle that sort of influx of information.
Yeah. Oh, mate, it's a challenge, right? Like there's more and more content being produced every day, too much, someone might say. But I guess if you pick and choose what's valuable to you, it's a win, right?
Yeah.
Especially if you've got some really good guys that you're following there that are putting out relevant stuff. You don't have to read every article for it to be valuable.
Yeah, and I also pick up a few articles and that sort of stuff out of Twitter.
Yeah.
I think Twitter's sort of like a good place to pick up information and especially people who are into interesting things.
Yeah.
I tend to pick up non-technical stuff from that. As I get older, I have a more of a interest just in stuff going on in the world, and read. I don't read newspapers, never have, but now you read news sites and that sort of stuff, which I didn't do when I was younger.
Yeah, I will link up your Twitter profile in the show notes as well. Yeah. I think we're going to try to start to get a little bit more active from. I think we only just launched our newer tech people Twitter handle yesterday or the day before, so we'll try and be a little bit more, a little bit more proactive there in sharing what's going on around Newcastle, sharing the opinions and of what's going on locally and some of the different events. So I think that's our angle from using Twitter. But I completely agree. There's some local people as well that put out some pretty cool, information and interesting articles and opinions on various topics. But I think Newcastle's got a reasonably strong Twitter following.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's hard to judge after being here for a number of years. Previous places I've been, Twitter wasn't a big thing back then, so it's hard to judge. But I think being a in a tech sort of arena, they're going to be more Twitter heavy than non-tech people, I would think.
Agreed. Mate, you made mention of it there. You've been around before. Mate, you've obviously, this learning path that you've been down, you've been around the world, you've worked overseas.
Mm.
Any key learnings that you might have got in your travels that you may not have got if you just stayed in Australia?
It's a big world out there, and not everyone lives the same as we do.
Yeah.
I started traveling, first time I traveled overseas was for work. I'd never traveled by myself before, and it was to Southeast Asia, and it was pretty eye-opening to go to a country that has vastly different classes and some of the social problems that they have, and realizing that I'd lived a pretty sheltered upbringing.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure in Australia as a whole is probably quite sheltered compared to some of the other countries out there. So it was quite, I guess, confronting is the right word. Traveling through sort of poorer parts of Indonesia and that sort of stuff, and seeing massive mansions right next to corrugated iron shanties. It's and you don't sort of see it that starkly in Australia.
Yeah, I agree. Is that something you'd recommend to people, just, you know, to do a little bit of that? Do you think so?
It certainly puts a lot of things in perspective.
Yeah, perspective's phenomenal, right?
Yeah, it does. And I think I certainly have appreciation for other cultures, where growing up as a kid, I never did things like history or geography or those things. I gravitated to the technical subjects, mathematics, physics, those sorts of things. And so I think I have, since travelled, have more of an appreciation for those sorts of things now. So when I go on holidays, I'm not a lying on a beach sort of person. I like to go look at the cultural stuff. Embrace the culture, the food and the temples and the history and that sort of stuff. And I find that quite interesting. And 18-year-old Wayne would have not have cared about that at all.
Yeah, he probably would have been in a different part of the country, right? Yeah. Maybe in one of the bars or something.
Yeah.
Mate, speaking of 18-year-old Wayne, mate, if you had a chat with him right now, what would you tell him? What would you say to him? Let's go career-wise to start.
Career-wise would be trust my instincts more. There's been a number of times where I've sort of haven't put my hand up or haven't stepped forward, thinking that, you know, I wasn't ready or didn't have the capability. And in hindsight, I probably did.
Mm-hmm.
So I could have potentially advanced a bit quicker in that case. Yeah, so being that more self-assured sort of person, yeah, I think would have been helpful. I'm not sure if I would have taken the advice, but...
that's another very good point. Any advice that you just give to people outside, you know, not talking to an early version of yourself, but just anyone, let's say they're looking, they've got an interest in technology and they wanted to grow their career, any advice you could give to other people?
Yeah, just have a go, learn, be curious and try things out. I think that's a common, you know, agile and those sorts of things have become quite popular these days, and one of the mentors is to fail fast, and I think doing that yourself is probably good advice as well. You know, not everything you're going to do is going to work. Not every job's going to work out.
Yeah.
Especially when you're younger, you have the ability to take risks. You know, once you get family and kids and that sort of stuff, you become a bit more safe in that regard with your career. But yeah, when you've got no dependents and you can go work overseas for 12 months, just do it.
Yeah.
You know, the skills and the life experiences you'll pick up would be excellent. So
agreed. Mate, let's go to Newcastle specific for a sec.
Yeah.
Mate, you've obviously been around Newcastle for a while. I think you've done a few of the bigger organisations around town. You've done Hunter Water, NIB and Mind Super.
Yeah.
Mate, what's your opinion on the changing state of the technology scene in Newcastle?
I certainly think that startup sort of stuff is a lot bigger now. That sort of didn't exist when I first came up here. And I think there's very much a two ends of the spectrum now. You've got your traditional enterprises that have existed here for a number of years and probably quite traditional in the way they operate. And then you have the other end of the spectrum. You have the startups that are very agile, using a lot of new technologies and those sorts of things. So I think that's probably the biggest difference is that pick up. And it's taking some time, but we're slowly getting there where some of those traditional businesses are moving more into that center space where they're sort of letting go of some of the traditional stuff and taking on board some of the newer technologies and new ways of doing things. But that's probably the biggest change that I've seen is that that startup mentality in Newcastle.
Yeah, and it's not even the small startups doing it themselves as much as you said. It's probably the larger organizations having more of a startup mentality. Mm. And whether it be even a startup mentality or just more of an agile approach, and there's obviously been a significant rise in agile over the past few years. But I think there is definite move towards that sort of fail fast, move quicker type approach, which definitely wasn't there.
And I think and it's just general and across the board, but that move from technology being, you know, the cost center to the enabler.
Yeah.
I think there's that general recognition now that no matter what you do in business, it involves some form of technology. So you've got to have the capability to move quickly. If the business wants to do something, they want to acquire another company or divest or whatever it is they want to do, they need to have the capabilities and skills in-house to do something, and it may not be expected. It's, I guess, back to that being able to morph into what you need really quickly, having the ability to learn things and take on things quickly instead of this traditional, you know, I'm an exchange admin, I've got 20 years experience as an exchange admin. Well, exchange has gone to 365 now, so that skill's gone. If that's what your bread and butter is, and you're not don't have the ability to adapt quickly, then you're not going to have a good, you know,
track record moving forward. Prospects don't look awesome.
So I think businesses, I think, are acknowledging the fact that they need to have those sorts of people in their technology team to be able to enact what the business decide to do next.
I agree. And I think there's also, I think there's probably the, you know, the rise of technology as an enabler has helped grow that, so that next tier down of companies that, you know, would have been one-man bands and probably outsourcing all their technology to a managed service provider in the past are starting to build out internal tech teams and build out their internal technology capabilities to drive the company forward.
Yeah, I think there's that acknowledgement of the, whether there's a cost saving or not, and that's obviously debatable about outsourcing, but there's a real benefit to having it in-source now just due to the fact that they know the business as opposed to just a generic outsourcer that will do what you ask them to do, but they're not doing the stuff they don't ask you to do.
Yeah.
You don't ask them to do. So, and that's where I think the that benefit comes from.
Yeah, well, I think, it's, as you said, it's a change in mentality. It's a mentality change from, hey, it's a cost center to enabler to drive our business forward. Mm. And if we're using something as an enabler to something that help drive growth, you probably want that in-house, right?
Yeah.
Or at least a solid portion of that in-house and still, you know, still leverage other providers.
Yeah, I think you want to outsource the very low value stuff or the not core business type stuff. So running an email server, every business does it. If you run the best email server in the world, it's not going to get you any business advantage. No. So at best it's a liability.
Yeah.
So that sort of stuff you outsource, but you want to insource the stuff where you could be adding business value. So instead of your having three guys manage Exchange, they're writing some process or some script or some web page that gives the business people quicker access to the data or whatever the case may be. But they're sort of more related to what the customers are after, not necessarily what the business just needs to do back office stuff.
Right, I agree. I think that's a really good, really good opinion. I agree with it. I think it's a changing mentality, as you said. It's a changing mentality, and there's a rise of this. And there's still some companies are on that path and maybe not there yet. But I think with enough, you know, people like yourself and others that are going through that or have been through that and happy to share those opinions and share your experiences.
I think it's it's that startup mentality to a degree, even if it's not acknowledged, because if you're, and I've never been in a startup, so I'm guesstimating here, but you need all those business things to start a business, but you'll go to some provider to get them because you just want them. You want to concentrate on what your product is, and that's no different to a larger organization. I don't think, you know, you don't need to worry about your email server. You need to worry about whatever it is your product is and getting it to market and improving it.
Yeah, and how are you going to serve your customers? Whatever they might be,
right? Whether you're, you know, 2-person organization or 1,000.
Yeah. Mate, for Newcastle then, Newcastle obviously, the size of Newcastle can be considered both a strength and a weakness. Strength from a perspective of probably more community driven, and mm-hmm. people tend to know what's going on around town, and you could probably have the ear of most people around town in having a chat about what they're doing, what they're working on. Weakness from a lack of opportunity. Mm-hmm. Opportunities are growing, but it's still limited versus, you know, major cities. Mate, what's your take on that Newcastle's tech scene?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. It's a double-edged sword. I know when I first wanted to move to Newcastle, so what was it, about 14 or 15 years ago, I was working in Sydney and I was working for a software vendor.
Yeah,
and on a pretty good wicket, and I wanted to move to Newcastle, and it took me about 6 months to find a job that I would consider sort of consummate to what I wanted. And it was still a fairly hefty pay cut. That wasn't really what concerned me. It was more the opportunity. At that stage, you know, 15 years ago, the businesses were still all very traditional. And being, you know, working Sydney CBD, that sort of stuff was a bit more advanced. So it was difficult finding an organisation that had that sort of culture that I was looking for.
Yeah.
And I think that's certainly starting to change. But yeah, certainly, back at that time, there would have been if I wanted to work in a reasonable size enterprise, we had a reasonable size IT budget, you were only looking at a couple of organizations.
Yeah.
And it certainly felt like that exclusive men's club where you had to wait for someone to die before you could get a spot.
Yeah.
I think that certainly has changed, but certainly been a bit slower than what would have liked. But that being said, I agree with you in that once you're in the Newcastle market, you can move around a bit easier.
Yeah.
You certainly, if you don't have a bad reputation, that's a good thing. But yeah, everyone knows everyone. Usually you find out about roles before they're in papers, or if they ever go to papers.
Yeah.
Back then, or these days online, and yeah, that's sort of, there is that sort of community effort. There's that social scene. There's quite a number of meetups in town.
Yeah.
And if you look at the attendees list, most of the same people on every meetup list. And so, yeah, I think there's certainly more of that community feel, which you don't get in the larger cities.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, I think in the wash, it comes out in the positive.
Yeah.
Hence why I'm here. But yep. It'll be interesting how it goes as Newcastle gets larger, especially in the tech scene, whether that stays very community focused or whether it sort of starts to dilute a bit and gets a bit more signified.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Mate, speaking of growth, obviously you're involved with DevOps Days and bringing DevOps Days to Newcastle. Mate, a couple of the other guys involved, Jonathan and then and Matt, have both been on the podcast. I don't think there's any coincidence there that I know all three of you and all three of you involved in that from a perspective of, I think we've all got a similar goals on helping Newcastle grow as a tech community, right? So like I'm super stoked to obviously be involved and know that you guys are trying to build the community and shine more light on Newcastle, sort of what's going on here, but also Newcastle's a community, but also the Newcastle tech scene. So I don't think there's any sort of coincidence.
Well, I think, I think there's that selfish part that a better tech scene means there's better opportunities for myself. But it also, I think, makes the possibilities more interesting. I used to go to this conference when it was in Sydney and Brisbane and Melbourne, and I just attend like everyone else. I'd turn up, do my thing, and leave. And while I could have been involved remotely, it just never dawned on me, and there's probably not an interest there.
Yeah.
But now there's this possibility, and now it's happening, bringing it to Newcastle. It makes it different for a number of reasons. And I'm not local. I didn't grow up here. I moved here 15 years ago. But it sort of takes on that. You sort of take on that vibe of a bit of ownership.
Yeah.
And it sort of happens without you noticing, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think it's a bit of that, paying back. It's just, hey, Newcastle's been good to you, obviously, and that's where your career is. And to continue to grow here, you want the whole scene to grow. So
yeah, and I think there's acknowledgement, certainly as I've gotten older, that you don't know everything.
Yeah.
And there's other good people in town, and they're doing good things, and there's a benefit in sharing what you're doing. You can help them out, they can help you out, even if it's not a role thing, even just in your current role.
Yeah.
There are things to learn from other people. There's some smart people in town, and and having easy access to them, I think, is a real benefit.
Outside of someone who's in a pure DevOps role or something very closely related, and where's the value for other people to sort of come along to an event like this?
So it's a non-profit organization, and it's while we have sponsors, obviously, because there's costs in running it, we don't have vendors' presentations. So it's purely about the community, and it's more, we try to encourage more about the culture and then about the tech itself. And we're also a fairly big proponent of diversity and supporting sort of underrepresented groups, so women and LGBT and those sorts of areas, because I think for me, technologies is a great equalizer. You know, I had those social skills, or lack thereof, when I was younger, and technology's given me a career that, you know, that has paid me back fairly well. So I think there's that opportunity for other people. So if you wanted to come along, you don't have to be a tech person. I think there's some real benefit for non-technical people coming and seeing potentially how the cultural aspects of technology-focused people work, and how potentially you can harness that, or how you can fit in, how there's those sorts of aspects I think are really, really useful.
Awesome. So you would say it's definitely... people outside of, you know, pure tech roles could find value in that?
Definitely. And I think that's evidenced by the fact we have a number of sponsors that have shown interest that aren't DevOps-style companies. You know, again, it goes back to that Newcastle mentality, but there's a number of companies I think that we'll be announcing pretty soon that are just Newcastle-based, and they want to support a Newcastle initiative, so yeah. Which is great.
Awesome.
Part of that community.
That's great, mate. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the easiest way?
Easiest way for me, I'm probably most responsive on Twitter.
Yep.
And the other end of the spectrum, if you send me an email, if it gets misses out that window that's in my inbox, you'll never get a response. So Twitter's probably the best way. Yeah, I'm on a number of Slack channels and around town and various things, but yeah, Twitter's probably easiest.
Perfect, mate. Not a worry, we'll link that up for you. Thanks for coming along.
No problem.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Nui Tech People. If you'd like to get in touch with Wayne, we've posted his details in the show notes on our website. As Wayne mentioned, Twitter's probably the easiest way for you to get in touch with Wayne to talk specifically anything DevOps or DevOps Days, which is coming to Newcastle in October. For everything else Nui Tech People related, you can follow us on the socials. Search Nui Tech People across Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. Enjoy your day.